Welcome everybody to episode 19 of the Golden Arrow series, looking back at the BDO World Championship. And I'm delighted to be joined by one of my personal darting heroes and the three-time world champion, Martin Adams. How are you, Martin?
I'm very well, thank you. Yes, thank you for inviting me.
I mean, how's the I mean, we're sort of, I don't know, I feel like we're coming out of it, but we might not be. How has the lockdown been for you?
Well, I was very, very fortunate. I had the approach from Modus in April to participate in the Icons of Darts, and that went all the way through to August. Yeah, and it's been pretty good to me, to be honest, but I've got loads of fun in the garden prior to that. Things like painting fences and sheds and stuff like that. I'm enjoying life. It's good to pass back open, though.
And did you enjoy playing that much darts at home?
I did, yes. It was something, how can you put it? Something different and unusual, but it was competitive. That was a thing. It's not very often you get things like, you know, doorbells in the background, you know, ding dong. I think it was... Fallon's young man, little boy, ice cream, stuff like that, you know, dogs barking in the background, you know, things like that. I mean, it was the boy from Spain. Oh, it's terrible. Jose Zusica. I mean, these little guys on motorbikes or whatever they were, Lambretta type things, you know, whizzing past his place when we're playing darts. It was all different and unusual, but it was quite pleasant to do it. It really was, and I thoroughly enjoyed it.
And it must have been nice to hit the nine darter on your birthday as well.
Yeah, it was, yes. It was very nice indeed, actually, yeah. That was a little bit of a surprise to myself. I don't know about anybody else, but when they go, they go. It's one of them. It was great to hit it, I must have been.
And looking back to the start of your career, how was it that you first got involved with the sport?
Oh, that's all down to a gentleman by the name of Terry Keep. Moved into my first new house. It was a brand new estate, and Terry was a neighbour, and he popped over for something. Can't remember what that it was, and I was in the utility room. I got doubled up with loads of cards, you know, just for the fun of it. Oh, you played that, wasn't you? I went, just put your doubled up in a spare room. Are you doing anything tonight? I went, no, not especially. He said, can I bring a couple of tins? He said, we'll warm the dartboard up. And I beat him up on his own dartboard. It was good. It all went from there, really.
I mean, did you fall in love with the sport straight away?
Well, I sort of did, yeah. I mean, I'd always loved darts and I loved watching darts. I remember watching Indoor League. I mean, you know, prior to that sort of situation. So I always enjoyed watching it. It was Terry that encouraged me to get involved with Super League, County and so forth, and that's all down to Terry, which, you know, for what I achieved, really.
And you made your BDO World Championship debut in 1994, and the week before you won the British Open, which must have, you know, boosted you up going into your debut.
Well, yeah, of course it did, yeah. I mean, yeah, British Open champion, it's one heck of a tournament to win in the day. Now, back in the day, I mean, I know it shrunk a little bit, but there was still a hell of a lot of people, into the British Open at that time, and I won it in 94. It was really good. And, yeah, it does give you that little bit of confidence.
And what were the nerves like when you went out onto the Lakeside stage for the first time?
I don't know, I can't remember. Is that long ago now? But all I know is the first leg, and I will never, ever forget the first leg. Like, first scout, first round. And I took him in 12 darts, 1-2-1 out, 20-51. Oh, thank you very much. Happy days.
I mean, you see a lot of players, you know, earlier in the series, I spoke to Scott Mitchell and it took him, you know, four attempts to win a game at Lakeside. You managed to get to your quarterfinals in the first year. Was that good for you that you went there and you'd done well and got a couple of wins under your belt?
It was good for me. It does give you confidence, there's no doubt about it. But all I would say is when Scott came into it, there was a lot more players which were well established, you know, in the system following 93. So, Scott, it took him a little bit longer, but he's turned out to be a great player, hasn't he?
You know, 1994, you got to the semis of the World Masters, and then when you were back at the Lakeside the following year, it was another semi. And in both of those tournaments, the way you went out, very tight games to Steve Beaton and Raymer van Barneveld.
Yeah, well, that's the way the mop flops, isn't it? When you lose, you lose. You know, that's the one thing with darts. Nothing's guaranteed. We all play to what we think is the best of our ability at the time. But what will be, will be. And you take it on the chin and move on to the next one. And you look at yourself and you say, next year, I'll do better next year. Every time, you know?
Yeah. I mean, later that year, 95, you got to the semis of the World Masters again, losing to Eric Claris from Belgium. But, I mean, the bigger thing that year was the World Cup in Switzerland. You, as England captain, kind of led an unprecedented sweep, and you yourself, you won the World Cup singles.
I know. I was very, very lucky there, really, because Graham actually threw for 151. And he threw at the bullseye as if he was throwing for 161. And I was sat on tops, and he let me have another chance purely because of his miscounting. So I was very, very fortunate to win it. But we had a great game, great match, and, we came off stage, good friends and so forth. But, he made a little bit of an error, and that sometimes it happens. It let me in, and it gave me the title.
And where does that clean sweep in 95, which had never been done before, where does that rank among your highlights of your 20 years as England captain?
Oh, it was definitely at the top, without a doubt. And then we did it again in 96 in Bundoran. And we took all the golds again in the Europe Cup. Yeah, and that was very pleasing indeed. The fact that it wasn't just a one-hit wonder, we did it twice.
I want to ask you about a tournament that's not always remembered by fans, but you played in the sort of rehashed News of the World done by the PDC. What are your memories of that?
Oh, my words, yeah. That was quite good fun, actually. Yeah, because, I mean, the News of the World was always sort of like best of three, 5-0-1, wasn't it, all the way through. And it was a tough thing to actually get to the finals. And having got to the finals, then I find myself playing Phil Taylor. And I had a shot to win and I didn't. There you go. That's life.
Yeah. And I mean, 97, 98, you went out early at the Lakeside, but in 1999, you got to the quarters and you played Chris Mason and you were 4-1 up in that game and then you missed 9 match darts. Was that a tough defeat to take?
Yes and no. No, it wasn't really when you look back on it, no. I mean, it was tough at the time, yeah. But one of the greatest things in that for me was we won 60 out, and Chris, you could see the look on Chris's face. It was, where the hell did that come from? And he's still in the game. I can't get rid of this guy. It was just a look on Chris's face. So it was, you don't see it at the time, obviously, because you're looking the other way. But, when you see the playbacks, it was a look on Chris's face was absolutely brilliant. But, at the time, you're bothered about it. But as time goes on, it's just one of them things. And played in a great match of darts against a great dart player.
2001, a couple of years later, you won the World Cup singles again with England, but you were also playing in the World Match Play, the World Grand Prix. Did you enjoy those PDC events you were playing in at the time?
I did, yeah. Yeah, thoroughly enjoyed them, yeah. I was really looked after. I mean, I had made some good friends, not just within the darts players themselves, but some of the security guys and people that were working, in and around the event, And it was a fantastic time, yeah. Thoroughly enjoyed it, yeah.
The 2002 World Championships, you were in another great game against Tony David in the semis. And this time, it was you doing the comeback. You were 4-1 down, you made it 4-all, and you had 2 darts to win. What are your memories of that game?
Very little bit, to be honest. Very little indeed. It's just one of them games. Topsy-turvy game. Swings one way, swings the other. I don't remember a lot about it, to be honest. Sorry, Tony.
It was a couple of years later that you made your first final, 2005. And how did you sleep the night before the final? Were you nervous at all?
No, I slept like a log. Yeah, I slept like a log the night before. Oh, no, I don't lay there tossing and turning. I haven't got a blind following day, You have your sleep, you get up, you have breakfast, and then you get on to the business at hand. Simple as that, really. That's the way I've always approached it. I don't lay there at night time worrying about the game. You have to play, and so, but, you know, sleep now, breakfast, then we get on to the darts the following day.
Although you came up short in that game, was it a useful learning experience for you?
Yeah, every time you play in a final, it's always a learning experience, win or lose, no matter which way it goes. And yeah, a learning experience without a doubt.
And I mean, soon after that, you had a run of tight games. You got to the semis of the World Masters again, semis at Lakeside the following year, and then the final of the World Masters in 2006 against Michael van Gerwen. Did it ever cross your mind that maybe you weren't going to win one of the big ones?
Several occasions, yeah. I thought, well, maybe I'm going to end up not being the bridesmaid, you know, rather than the bride, you know, that sort of stuff. You know, of course it crosses your mind, but, you know, you still plug on and hopefully you win one. You can't change the history of the game. You can't change what's gone on. Results. You can't go back and play it all again. You know, results are the results. But you think to yourself, am I ever going to win one? But you've always got your fingers crossed that you will.
I mean, when I spoke to you before, I told you the 2007 final you had with Phil Nixon got me hooked on the sport. But was it useful for you that, you know, you'd been there before, whereas this was sort of Phil's first time, really, getting that much exposure?
Well, I think it did stand me in good stead, the fact that I had been in the final before. I knew what to expect, and not only out on stage, but also, you know, prior to, you know, in the back room and so forth. That stood me in good stead there. Phil at the time was certainly a new face to the viewing public, but I'd known Phil for 20 years and I knew what he was capable of. And I knew he was dangerous. But in first six sets, I thought, well, where's the Phil Nixon I know? You know, and then we went for the break, and then when we came back after the break, yeah, the Phil Nixon that I knew suddenly came out and started playing darts, didn't he? You know, brilliant. Absolutely magical.
I mean, the game is amazing, but I suppose, you know, some players, if they'd seen the way Phil came back, it might have affected them. But did it help you, the fact that in the semis against Mervyn King, you had another really, really tight game and you'd had to overcome, you know, the nip and tuck of a deciding set?
I've got to be honest. I mean, you know, playing in the final, the game I'd had in the semi-finals didn't even enter my mind at all. Not once. Because that game was done, dealt with, I won it, got through the final, and I'm playing this game. Not playing, you know, it's no good looking back on another game that you played before. You know, you've got to play this game now. And when we got around to that final set, I thought, just play like you did the first set, because that went really, really well. You know, you can do this. And fortunately, it came good.
And what was that moment like when the winning double went in and you knew that 13 years after your debut, you were a world champion?
Absolutely brilliant. You can't buy that feeling, I'll tell you. You cannot buy it. Absolutely brilliant to win it. You know, it's a title you've chased for so many years, and now you've got it. You know, it's just, you can't describe it. It's just phenomenal.
And did it sink in straight away what you'd achieved, or did it take a little while for you to adjust?
Oh, yeah, I think it did sink in straight away, particularly when I got the trophy in my hand and the cheque. That always sort of hammers it home, should we say. No, it wasn't one of them things where I thought, oh, had I really won it? But I knew I'd really won it because I got the trophy in my hand. So, yeah, straight away I knew it, and it was it. And I loved it, every second of it.
What was that first year like that you spent as the world champion?
Absolutely brilliant. Had a fantastic year. The receptions that you get at different tournaments and exhibitions and stuff, absolutely phenomenal. That's one of the things that you don't sort of like know about. The reaction of the press as well for 2 weeks after, you know, how that goes, and you keep getting phone calls about it and talking about it and so forth. You know, that side's really pretty manic, but, you know, thanks to everybody for the receptions I got at all the different events I went to, be they tournaments or exhibitions.
It was strange in a sense, when you came back to Lakeside the following year to defend your title, lo and behold, the first round you had to play Phil Nixon again.
Oh no, I couldn't believe it when I see the draw come out, because the draw was done at the Masters. I thought, I can't believe this. I beat him in the last game and the last one. I can't be playing in the first one, surely not. But yeah, Phil Nixon again. But yeah, we had a good game, and Phil's point of view, yeah, sad, but he lost.
Your run ended at the quarterfinals that year to Mark Webster, but later in the year, you finally managed to win the World Masters, and I know that that was a competition you'd always wanted to win.
Absolutely, because I love the trophy. The trophy was the thing. I wanted to bring that trophy home for so many years. I thought, I just love that trophy. I want it at home in my house for at least 12 months. You know, it's fantastic. So best trophy in the world, in my view.
Mm.
But there we go. I mean, yeah. And, you know, I was lucky enough to win it in 2008.
I mean, you then won it in 2009 and 2010. Did any of those World Masters wins stand out as more special than the others, or are they all equally special to you?
No, the first one is really special. The other two, yeah, they sit really nice. And yeah, when you get the third one, yeah, I've got the proper hat trick. I've equaled Bob Anderson's record now. Maybe next year I can go one better and have four on a spin. But unfortunately, that wasn't the B. But, you know, the first one is always very special, without a doubt.
And looking back to the World Championships, you know, you won it again in 2010 and 2011. And in the 2010 one, you played an Aussie, Anthony Fleet, in the first round. And I remember watching the game, he was very, very nervous. Did that affect you at all?
He wasn't nervous, come on, be honest. He was drunk as a skunk. From what I was told, he slung about six scotches down his neck before he went out on stage. Now, you know what it's like when you've had a few beers and you go out in the cold? It can hit you like an hammer. Well, the heat can do the same thing. And the heat of the venue, it hits him like an hammer. And he, well, I don't know, he nearly fell over twice, didn't he? I mean, at the time, yes, I was trying to be nice with the interviews and all that, you know, yeah, he was just tired or whatever, but, you know. But be honest, he was as drunk as a skunk. You can't be honest about it now, have you? He had a well good drink. Bless him. I liked Tony as well. He was a nice guy. Mm. But when he came down to playing in that match, he was just nowhere. Mm. And I struggled to play that game, to be honest, because it's hard to play against a player that you know is having some serious problems with his own game. And your concentration is broken. And I mean, I remember in Tilly, my mate, was doing the doing something on the officials table, and I looked at him and I went, Ian, I said, he's drunk. He went, I know. He said, get on with him, win it then. But just one of them little things that comes out of it, stories that come out of it. But bless him, Tony. After we finished that game, I never saw him again. He disappeared that night or tomorrow or early in the morning or whatever, just disappeared. Mm. It was a bit of a shame in some ways because, you know, there was a lot of mileage in that, if you know what I mean. Bless you, Tony, I don't mean it really, if you're listening. We'll have to do this again one time. Brilliant. It was one of them games, and you don't get that sort of thing very often, but, you know, it's one of them things that happened. Bless
you. You had a little wobble that year against Martin Phillips. I think it was in the semis, but you won it in the end over Dave Chisnell, and it was just so remarkable that year and every other year how much that Lakeside crowd just loved you. How much did that boost you when you were playing a game?
Oh, it gives you a great big boost. It really does, yeah. When the crowds, you can tell they're on your side, and you can tell when they're enjoying the darts, no matter who's throwing them, whether it was me or the opponent or whatever, you know, the crowd are just there and they're loving it. But when they do get behind you as an individual, and it really is a great boost. But, Mr. Martin Phillips, what a player. Always been a thorn in my side, that boy. He just don't know when to lie down. No, I love them both, I tell you. Chizzy as well, God bless him.
You retained the world title in 2011, and you were the first player since Barney to retain the world title. Which one was more difficult to retain, the Lakeside title or the World Masters?
I think the Lakeside, yeah. I think I struck on the third World Masters. I think I struck a bit lucky. Who did I play there? Was it, the young lad from Manchester area?
Stuart Kellett in the final.
Stuart Kellett, that's it, yeah. He wasn't throwing at his best, and you could tell he was struggling. And it was just a shame, really, because the end result could have been a lot different. But, you know, Stuart was just struggling that day. But, you know, on the third World Masters. But the third Lakeside, very, very difficult indeed.
And, I mean, you'd won 12 games in a row by the time you got to 2012 and you went out in the quarters to Tony O'Shea. And it was a nice symmetry, in a sense, because the first game when you won it in 2007, you whitewashed Tony.
I know. I remember coming off from that game. I had to do the interview, and I went, well, I'm sorry, guys, but you don't just beat Tony O'Shea 9-0. No. Tony's too good a player. And I said, I just don't know what went on there. And I was sort of shell-shocked that I'd actually beaten him 9-0. I thought, no, you don't beat Tony O'Shea 9-0. He always comes back with something. But through the match, I'm expecting Tony to bring some big scores in, some nice finish. And if he brought the big score in, then the finish just wasn't happening for him. You know, it was a bit of a shame, really. Sad day for Tony, but a great day for me. Mm. Yeah, I mean, Tony had no explanation for it. He's just, you know, Tony looks at it, just bad day at the office. Going on to, you know, Tony beating me, yeah, I mean, Tony played well that day. That was the thing, you know, the expectation of the way Tony plays, it came out that day, and Tony played brilliant darts. And that's the sort of thing you always expect from Tony O'Shea.
Mm. Well, I know when I interviewed him earlier in the series, he said that he saw a mind coach to help him, and one of the things they worked on was the fact that in the big tournaments, he could never seem to beat you.
Times, you know, he's just not remembering the wins, he's remembering the defeats. Yeah, and sometimes it plays on your mind, I suppose, but you know, Tony's a fantastic player. And yeah, I remember him going through the sort of mind coach, and yeah, it did him great good, actually. Did him great good.
And 2013, your sort of 20-year stint as England captain came to an end. Was that your decision, or was that the EDO's decision?
That was the EDO's decision. Yeah, certainly not mine. Yeah, I'd gone through a divorce and so forth. So, you know, at the end of the day, they probably made the right decision, you know, from the team perspective. So, yeah, you know, that's it. You know, the decision's made, and you go, well, thank you for 20 years as England captain. And, yeah, we'll carry on.
So what was your reaction sort of this year when you were given the job of England captain again, and I think in similar circumstances to the first time?
Sort of gobsmacked, really. But, you know, how can I put it? I don't know how to put it. It said a lot to me from England, saying, yeah, we recognise that, you know, you're over all that stuff. You're back playing good darts, and yes, we feel we've got the confidence in you to lead the team again. You know, Scott was unavailable, as I understand from, so I spoke to Scott, and he was sort of like torn between two houses, as it were, and do I do this one, do I do that one, or what do I do? And he made a decision that he was going to, you know, stand down as England captain, and, you know, England invited me to be England captain again, which, you know, thank him very much for it.
I mean, you haven't had the chance to play for England this year for the pandemic, but hopefully you'll be back on the world stage playing in Europe Cups and World Cups again from next year.
I sincerely hope so, yeah. It's one of those things, it's a desire of any sportsman, not only to represent your country, but to be captain is something really, really special.
And when you were going through the divorce and you had issues off the hockey, was that affecting your performances in tournaments?
Yeah, it did, yeah. Yeah, it affected my performance. It affected sort of like how I was away from the hockey as well. But I'm pleased to say we've got over all that now.
Mm.
Yeah.
I mean, you certainly did. I mean, you certainly were over it, though. A couple of years later, 2015, you got to the final. And before we talk about that game, your semi with Glenn Durrant, when I spoke to him last week, he said that that game was the single most influential game in his whole career.
Well, obviously, I can't speak for Glenn. I thoroughly enjoyed the game, even more so that I came out on top. Tough opponent. It was always going to be a tough match. And I'm pleased to say I came out on top.
If I seem to remember correctly, you missed a dart for a 9 darter in that game as well.
Yeah, I did, yeah. A little double 12, yeah. But never mind, eh? That one goes down in history as a missed one.
Oh, but I mean, that final against Scott Mitchell, obviously you knew him through England and stuff, and I mean, that was really nip and tuck all the way. You know, were you pleased? And obviously you were disappointed to lose, but were you pleased for him that he'd managed to go on and win it?
I was very pleased for him, and I still maintain that that 1-3-8 out was dead lucky. Yeah, he was dead lucky to get that shot, because if he hadn't got that shot, he wouldn't have won it. And I keep reminding him of that. He doesn't believe me, but there you go. But no, I was well pleased. The funny thing was, at the end of the match, he'd won it. He didn't know what to do. And the viewers or listeners or whatever will have to excuse me. I said, Scott, give it a fucking large one. You've just won the title. And that's what I said to him. But with that, he went into one, didn't he? He just didn't know what to do with himself. What do I do? That's what I told him.
Well, I mean, I asked him afterwards because he did seem a bit lost after the dart had gone in, and he did say that you had said that to him, and he threw one of his toy Scotty dogs into the crowd and someone threw it back and hit him in the face.
Yeah, that was cracking, that was. Absolutely brilliant. It's just one of the funny things that happens on the stage, you know. I mean, absolutely brilliant dance on the day from Scotty. You know, that's the thing. It's one of those games that will always be sort of there for being repeated as a great match. Scotty came out on top. Mm. A fair play with him, you know. He threw the best darts on the day.
Mm. In the next few years, sort of mixed results, a couple of first-round exits, and then 2019, you missed the tournament for the first time in 25 years. What was it like being on the other side, still being there, but doing the punditry instead?
It was absolutely different, and I wasn't quite sure going down there, how I would take to it. But I'll tell you what, I had a wonderful time working with, you know, guys like Nat Coombs and a young lady, Georgie Bingham. It was absolutely brilliant. And I learned a lot about the backstage stuff. And I learned that, yes, you have to sit down and you have to watch that screen and you have to be watching the darts because Nat could have asked me anything about any of the matches, anything about, so you've got to be there and looking at the match and taking everything in, because if you don't, you go out there, do the interview, you're dead in the water because you just can't remember what's going on. So you've actually got to sit and watch it. You know, so not drinking is the key to it. Mm. No, it's not just concentration. You've actually got to watch the darts. It's quite an exhausting experience as it happens. Mm. So, you know, first 2 or 3 days I've done it, I've felt quite knackered. When we got back to the hotel, I mean, mentally drained. But, you know, it's one of those things. Very interesting to do. Thoroughly enjoy doing it as well. I would never object to doing that sort of thing again in the future, that's for sure.
And then you were back playing this year, but obviously it was totally different and you were at the O2. And I know from previous interviews, you weren't a fan of it, were you?
No, I wasn't a fan of it at all, no. I mean, it didn't help when somebody said to me in the crowd before I played, they went, oh, it's just like the Lakeside. I said, no, it isn't. There's no carpet. That was my response. And I mean, no, it wasn't the Lakeside. I was very sad that it had left the Lakeside. It'd been there, I'd been there, you know, 25 years playing on the spin. 26th year, I was commentating, you know, helping out with that side of being the pundit. And then year 27, I'm playing at, that place. Don't get me wrong, it is a great venue. I played there a couple of exhibition nights there, and yeah, we've had a great time. But for the World Championship, it was just, I wasn't the same, and it didn't quite fit with me, really. But there you go. That's me. I'm an old codger now, you see.
A few years ago, you accepted the invitation to play at the Grand Slam, but, I mean, originally, when you turned it down, why was it that you refused?
A lot of it was to do with playing for England. If I went over to and played within that particular event, there was a possibility I wouldn't be able to play for England. Plus, of course, it didn't match up sometimes. The World Masters was one event it didn't match up with. Another thing were another year I had exhibitions booked, so I couldn't do it. So, you know, it was six of one, half dozen of the other. And Barry only accused me of having misplaced loyalties. God bless you, Barry. I think you'll still think you were wrong, but there you go. He had an opinion, and that's what it was. But I'm sure if I meet Barry in the future, we'll have a laugh about it.
Because I remember the story came out. He said that they wouldn't be inviting you anymore, and then you sort of replied and said, "Well, that saves me having to turn you down again."
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, there was always a bit of banter in the press and things like that and stuff. Yeah, it was brilliant, really. And that's what I mean. You know, if I meet up with Barry again, maybe in the future, I said we'll probably have a good laugh about it, to be honest, because he was quite funny when you look back.
So, when you played in 2015, what had changed that made you accept the invitation?
Oh, I actually phoned the BDO. I said to them, I've had this invitation. Do you want me to play? I said, if the BDO doesn't want me to play, I won't. And the response came back, yes, we want you to play. I said, okay, I shall play. And that's simply the reason I played. No more, no less.
You played there in 2016 as well, but obviously at the time you were dealing with your prostate cancer treatment. How tough was that year for you physically, mentally?
Any of the guys that are going through prostate cancer treatment will understand this. Those that are not won't. But us guys that go through treatment for prostate cancer understand what hot flushes are all about. The ladies go through them when they go through the change. Because one of the treatments is you get injected with female hormones. One of the side effects of that is hot flushes. When you're going for a double and you get a hot flush, oh, that's hard. And I guarantee it, you're going to miss it 100 times and hit it maybe once. So that's what that's all about, really. It just makes the game very, very hard. And sometimes you'll go up there and you're feeling good. Yeah, first leg, and you're halfway through the first leg, and then the whole hot flush comes through, and the darts are just going everywhere. I know, if there's any guys out there that play darts and are true of prostate cancer, they will know exactly what I'm talking about. But it's a weird thing. But the good thing is the fact that the treatments work.
It's good, in a sense, you can laugh about it now because you've come through the other side and you've been a great ambassador for them in the years since.
Yeah, I mean, it's a thing that men are not necessarily able to talk about easily as health conditions. And I know that through prostate cancer, there was a bit of a campaign to get men talking. You know, your builders, your carpenters and plumbers and so forth, you know, in the pub in the afternoon, you know, late afternoon, early evening, you know, talk about your health issues, you know, think about prostate cancer, you know. Are you of an age where you should be going to your GP and have a test and so forth? So we went through that sort of promotion and awareness campaign. I mean, my van, if you see it on the road, it's covered Prostate Cancer UK. It's an awareness tool. So the more awareness we can get out there for guys, the better it is, you know. And if you are sort of like anywhere 40 to 50, and you're even concerned about it in your mind, go to your GP and say, look, I want a PSA blood test. I want to know for sure, one way or the other, am I potential, am I clear, what, you know, that's the best test we've got at the moment is the PSA blood test. If the PSA is raised, there's a chance, so therefore get referred, go to the hospital, and have them check it out proper.
And I mean,
that's all I'll say.
Focusing sort of on the darts, just for a few things now, I mean, the BDO have had issues for a few years. I know you're going to know that as well as anyone. But is it sad for you the way it's gone since the World Masters last year?
I wouldn't say, yeah, bad initially, yeah. I mean, getting through that last two or three months there. Once we sort of like got past the World Championship, things sort of like eased a little bit because then you're into tournaments that are just, you know, associated with the World Darts Federation, Star Association and so forth. So, you know, it wasn't like a BDO event. So, yeah, things were sort of back to normal, but it doesn't surprise me one little bit that the BDO has folded. It's dead and buried, and I think we buried it with Ollie Croft.
And, I mean, I know you've been asked this hundreds of times before. that, you know, that you've never considered going to the PDC before, but now the BDO has folded, would you contemplate giving Q School a go?
At my age, no. I'm 64. even if I qualified, I don't think I could stand the pace.
Mm.
Their tour is grueling. That's what I see as an outsider. The PDC's tour is a grueling event. I don't think at my age I will be able to cope with it. No.
Mm.
It would kill me. Well, not kill me, but, you know, I just wouldn't be able to cope with it. No. Too old. So, leave it to the young'uns, that's me.
And looking back over your illustrious career, who would you say was the toughest opponent you played on the Lakeside stage?
Oh, toughest opponent on the Lakeside stage? Oh, blimey. That is difficult, because there's so many great dart players I've played against, and many of them are as tough as each other. But if I was going to pick one out, No, I couldn't pick one. Because when they're on their game, they're so hard to beat. It doesn't matter who they are, they're so hard to beat. So I wouldn't want to single out one player, because they're such fantastic players, the guys you play against, you know, whether win or lose. You know, I mean, you know, playing Mervyn, you know, Mervyn was a good mate. And, well, still is a good mate. And, you know, to play your mates is a toughie. A real, real toughie. But you have to forget the friendship when you get up there, you know, when you game on and just play darts as if you're playing any other dart player. But in the back of your mind, yeah, you're still thinking friendship. And, you know, but hard games. I wouldn't want to single anybody out, to be honest, no. Because they're all as tough as each other when they're on their game.
When we spoke before, you said that the goal for you was to match Lionel Smith's record and still be playing county at 75. Has that changed at all during lockdown?
No, definitely not. I mean, having played in that, you know, the motorcycles of darts, I mean, it certainly made it clear to me, yes, it's still there. You can still do this. You can still compete. You know, I'm 64, so I ain't got long, you know, 11 years. Yeah, I can still do it, yeah. I'll try to beat Lionel's record. So I'll still be there when I'm 76. Bless him. I loved Lionel. What a great player he was.
And the last question from me, and this is another one that's going to probably be challenging for you, but what would you say was your biggest career highlight?
Oh, biggest career highlight? That's no problem at all. Biggest career highlight, definitely winning the Lakeside 2007. And running along just behind that is that World Cup singles in 95.
Mm.
Oh. Without a doubt, they're the top two.
That was a lot easier than the toughest opponent one then for you.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. I mean, the thing is with toughest opponents, there's so many great dart players, and we've played each other on different occasions, and some you win, some you lose. I wouldn't want to single anyone out as being tougher than anybody else, because when your opponent is on his game, you know, it doesn't matter whether it's Tony O'Shea, whether it's Mervyn King, whether it's Scotty Mitchell, whether it's Scotty Waites, or whoever, Dean Winstanley, you know, they're hard to play, and they're all tough. And if they beat you, they beat you. It's as simple as that. So I wouldn't want to, I couldn't single anybody out, no.
Well, big thank you, Martin, for coming on the podcast. As I said before, you're one of my favourite dart players of all time, and your win in 2007 got me into the sport. So thank you very much for your time.
You're very, very welcome, dear boy. And don't forget, everybody, particularly the guys, if you've got a dance mate, prostate cancer, go get your PSA blood test. Find out.